We're beginning our class on the Jewish home. And today, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will be discussing a few important topics, and we'll see how far we get. So, our first topic is the topic of stability in the home. We had a student here of blessed memory, he's no longer with us, who got married and told his wife, "I have to join the army because I have to protect my people." Very noble reasons he wanted to join the army. He was too old, the army didn't want him. So he's walking around the Biki Pasruga, and he spent a lot of his life in the military, and he's yearning to serve in the military, to help the Jewish people. So, comes Shabbos, he tells his wife, "You know, I want to honor Shabbos, so I want to buy myself a big Hasidish hat." So she says, "You wear a kippah sruga, you daven in a shul where no one else wears any of these big fur hats. We live in a town where there's no one who wears such a big fur hat. Why do you want to wear such a big fur hat?" So he said, "In honor of Shabbos." So she said, "Don't you think you're going to stand out if you walk around with a big fur hat when no one in the community does that?" So he said, "Don't you want to honor Shabbos?" Okay. 2 months go by, and he says, "You know, it's not right. These Arabs are doing really bad things to the Jewish people. I have to go protect the Jewish people. I want to go serve in Afghanistan." So I said to him, I mean, he notified me of his plans, and I said, "You know, are you sure you're going to help the Jewish people by going to Afghanistan?" He said, "Sure, I got to kill those Arabs." I said, "We're here in Israel. What are the Arabs in Afghanistan doing to us?"
"They're not Arabs."
"Rabbi, you don't understand." I said, "You're right, I don't understand. You guys are laughing. The sad part of this is that every part of the story is true. It's very easy for us to look at other people and laugh. When we look at someone else, it's very obvious to us to see where the person is being imbalanced. But very often we get caught up with all kinds of ideas and we don't notice that we are also off balance. And it's very hard within a marriage, who's going to tell whom who's imbalanced. You know the golden rule. The golden rule in all of life is if you want to know what's balanced is, and you can ask any person, they will tell you, balanced is me. And everyone to the right of me is extreme, and to the left of me is too liberal. Ask any person, they'll tell you that about themselves. Most people view themselves as balanced. And most people feel that they are the barometer, they are the gauge of what's balanced and what's imbalanced. So that makes it difficult. Every person views themselves as being perfectly balanced. If it's the other people that are off. But within a marriage, this isn't something that you can play games with. You're in Machon Meir, you want to wear a big fur hat, fine. Not a good idea, but no one will knock you for it. Maybe they will knock you for it. We won't knock you for it. You want to talk about how serving in Afghanistan is the way to protect the Jewish people. People will respect you. You can talk about it in the lunchroom, fine. When you get married, it's not a game anymore. There's someone else's happiness that is contingent on your stability, on your being a responsible adult. And that's why it's important before marriage and during marriage to be stable and consistent. That doesn't mean we can't grow, but that means that our growth has to be in a stable, consistent fashion. I had a friend who ended up in a school down in Miami for troubled teens, where he wasn't allowed to see his parents for 6 months at a time, like a boot camp. And the reason he went off his rocker was because his father kept fluctuating. 1 year he'd say, "No TV in the house, TV is the worst thing in the world." And they'd come with a hammer, bash the TV and say, "No more TV in the house." And then he'd be super religious and A few months later, he'd be dying to see the news. He just wanted to see the news. Slowly the TV would creep in, and then after the news came the wrestling matches, and after that the football games and the innocent soccer games, and then the cheerleaders, and then from there, cable, until 3 years later he realized, I'm not being as frum as I want to be. Back with the sledgehammer. And you're laughing. The sad part is, it's true. So the kids walked away imbalanced. If the house isn't balanced, they're not balanced. And I remember as a kid, this was my classmate, we grew up together. I remember thinking, I wish I could go and tell this guy, leave the TV there. You know, be consistent one way. Obviously, I'd rather leave the TV out, but I think it's worse for the kids to have such a home. And even if your wife is going to go with you on these binges of religiosity, that doesn't mean it's good for the kids or good for you. A home has to be a place of stability. A home has to be a place where you know what to expect, your wife knows what to expect, your children know what to expect. There are people who are super nice to their wives until they become super mean to their wives. And then they become super nice to their wives. They fluctuate. Now, every relationship has its ups and downs, but there has to be a range. And we discussed this last week. We discussed the Gra that describes why in the blessing prior to Kriyat Shema we have Ahavat Olam and Ahava Rabba. Remember? We said Ahavat Olam means an eternal love, Ahava Rabba means a great love. So there always has to be a basis of an eternal love. There has to be a basis of a given that's there. I can count on the relationship, she can count on the relationship. There's a basic love that's going to be there. So let's ask ourselves, if there's a basic love and then there's a fluctuation, sometimes you're more excited over your spouse, sometimes less, sometimes they're more excited about us, sometimes less. Okay, there's going to be that fluctuation, but there has to be a basis that we don't go down from there. Ask yourself, what are the points that we can expect from one another within that basic Ahavat Olam, that eternal love? Let's keep it to minimum. Minimum. Because you have to factor, there are going to be times that you're super upset at her. There are going to be times you're super upset at her mother and her grandmother and her sister and her for siding with them. There are going to be times you're super upset at the expense she made or the joke she made at your expense or something else. Okay, so now let's ask ourselves. You're standing in the middle of your son's pidyon haben, and she gets up and makes cracks a joke at your expense in front of the whole audience. Now, what's the minimum you expect of yourself? Remember, Ahavat Olam. Let's take the moment where you discover that she has a gambling problem and she maxed out the credit cards and put your house back on the market. A loan shark, okay? What's the basic Ahavat Olam that you expect from yourselves?
No.
No, I'm asking you a serious question. It's very easy. We say these concepts in a vacuum, but what happens when these concepts have to meet up with real life? You were sitting at a cocktail party, and she was talking to her friend, and she said, yeah, Mr. Van Wick, yeah, my husband can't stand him. My husband comes home every night. He cracks jokes at his expense. Every night my husband tells me what kind of nincompoop he is. And it happens to me, Mr. Van Wick is your boss. And he was standing right behind her as she was saying that. And you know where your job's going. Now you come home and you have to deal with being jobless thanks to her wonderful comment. Where's your Ahavat Olam? What's the basic level that you expect of yourself? Let's not talk what you expect from her. But what do you expect from yourself at the most difficult moments? Ask yourself. I believe that people should make treaties with themselves. Before you're in the heat of the moment, ask yourself, what do I expect of myself when I'm going to be in the heat of the moment?
What would be a good way of reacting to these sorts of scenarios?
I'm not saying do's and don'ts yet. If you want, we could discuss that. But I can't
imagine what would be the right response from you.
Don't.
I'm willing to answer that in my humble opinion, but only after you guys have thought for a minute what you expect of yourselves at those moments. Because what often happens is that those moments define the relationship. You don't want them to define the relationship, but the reaction and the way we let things evolve or guide things to evolve could very often have repercussions that go way beyond the moment. Yes, marriage is built of little things, but scars can sometimes come from big things. And we have to ask ourselves, what do I expect of myself when big things happen?
That's what the big thing is. I think everything is, like, outside of cheating, because people are human, it's second chance. But I think cheating, that's it.
Right? Fine. The halacha is with you on that. Okay. The halacha says, when does the halacha expect the person to get divorced? If he knows his wife was with another man, so that's it, it's over. That's the Torah's description of when a couple gets divorced. Kimotzo bar vastavar.
And she's with someone else.
To be discussed a different time. Yeah.
When she burns the food, right?
That was discussed on Thursday night 3 weeks ago. Okay. Did you guys think for yourself? I want to throw out some ideas.
You don't have to give her a guess if you want
to. Look it up. Thursday night, 3 weeks ago. Tough question, guys, right? She burnt your toast. What are you supposed to do?
Only shit on purpose. Most people expect that they don't lose control.
I think there are red lines that a person has to draw for himself. So let's start with red line number one, which I'm going to explain why it's harder than you might think. Red line number one, to my mind, is you're never physically violent with your wife. Now you think, isn't that obvious? And I'll tell you why it's harder. Because very often being physical starts with her. She smacks him. Now if he smacks her back, that's it. You know, he's being violent. We discussed this once before, but I think that that's, if we're going to discuss, okay, what's Ahavat Olam? What's the basic structure I expect of myself as a basic concept that I'm not going to transgress, doesn't matter what's going to happen. So, you mentioned a good point, I'm not going to cheat on her as upset as I am at her. Fine. I didn't even think to mention that because everyone knows that's biblically prohibited to the point where it usually is even Yarg Val Yavar. It's almost always a situation where a person should rather get killed than transgressing that. I would say always, but there are rare exceptions. You know, they put a gun to her head or whatever, but so it's almost always a situation where a person should rather get killed than do that, so I didn't think to mention infidelity. But okay, I agree with that red line. Red line number two should be that one is never physically violent, even if she crossed the red line. Even if she did smack you. I think a person, it should be very clear to a person, walk out. You don't have to fight back. You could walk out of the house. You could walk out of the room.
Oh wait, when she hits you, it's not as... It's not like a sign to get in the bedroom.
Okay. I'm glad you came tonight. You learned something. Very good. I didn't know if anyone else learned something. At least I know someone learned something tonight. Okay. I said walk out.
Walk out into the bedroom.
I think that if a woman becomes violent, if a woman hits you or smacks you, I think that's the time to walk out of the house. It's not the time to walk out of the marriage, but it is the time to walk out of the house. You have to understand, your walking out of the house is the most hurtful thing you can do to a woman.
Then why do you want to hurt her so much?
I'm not saying to do it to hurt her. I'm just saying if you're asking yourself, hey, I didn't do anything, so you should realize you did. But
or to stop yourself from hitting her.
It's more right, because I want to make sure you don't hit her back. I want to make sure she doesn't continue hitting you. And I want to make sure she realizes she crossed the red line and that's not going to happen again. So even though I always advocate don't walk out, because to the wife, walking out is one of the most hurtful things you can do in a marriage. It doesn't matter how heated the argument is. When you walk out of the house, to her, that's like pulling away in a drastic way, and that's very hurtful to most women in most circumstances. In this circumstance, I think that's the right response.
What if she walks out on you from something you've said?
Let's not go there yet, okay? Let's continue with what we're on right now. So we said red line number one is we don't hit, we don't get violent, and the reason this is so relevant is because we also don't hit back. If a person knows he has a history of violence, okay, so he has to deal with it. That's you know, that's part of a person's self-work. One guy has to work with drugs, another guy has to work with alcohol, the third guy has to work with violence. Point. So that's point number two. But let's move forward from there. What other things do we expect from ourselves when we say ahavat olam? There's a basic love that that always has to be there.
Basic love, and like the basic love can change. That's what she said in her book, and that it's like the sort of basis upon which a couple works.
Okay, but that's not what we're talking about. Coming back to this point, I think the next thing that we have to include in our Ahavat Olam is that there's a dirty word that's not mentioned in the house. You know what that dirty word is?
The D word.
Very good. The D word. Divorce. As bad as things are going to be, and as tough as our argument is going to be, that's not something we're discussing. That's not an option.
Why is it not an option? It's legal, isn't it?
I didn't say it wasn't legal. But in order for marriage to work, it has to be a given that we're making it work. The second part of our argument is going to be, so do you want a divorce? Then in the heat of the moment, either side might say, yeah, of course. Are you going to challenge me? Are you going to threaten me? Sure. I'll meet you at the Rabbanut. Okay, tomorrow morning. Okay, before you know it, I've seen couples get divorced over this. Where they're each going to, I'll show you, and then boom, they're there. That's not a part of the argument. It's not a use of force. It's not a threat.
It's all a last resort.
No. Leave it out of the picture. It's not a last resort.
It has to happen sometimes. Sometimes it's good for people to get...
Go consult with 15 consultants before you think that. Go to 15 therapists. After 15 therapists tell you you should get divorced, I'm willing to hear it. Short of 15 therapists, I think you're cutting yourself short.
You could do two mitzvot. You could divorce and then be married.
Okay, so let's do one mitzvah. Let's stay married. What? That's true. Right? Okay.
So when you tell somebody an abusive relationship, like let's say the man's abusing the woman and her life is on the line, you tell her go consult 15 people and you tell her get the heck out of there.
Let her call me and then we'll figure it out. But you'd be
really?
Surprised
figure
how many you'd be surprised how many abusive situations are living happily together today. Yes, people can get help and they can work and make themselves better. What's Mahon Meir all about? You know how many people sat in this room that have a history that's much worse than that? Sorry. Not so long ago, there was a guy here who told me he killed a person.
Well, like at war, like just like...
No, not at war. Okay.
Do I know him?
I don't understand. You don't believe in the concept of tshuva? What's Machon Meir all about? Okay. So I said, go figure it out. Maybe they'll have to separate and they'll make it work. But the fact that a person has a weakness doesn't mean you can't make it work. And the easiest thing to do when things explode is to consider divorce. And that's the wrong thing to do. Marriage is about making it work. So the fact that things exploded doesn't mean that that should be on the table. No.
What if divorce will help save the children? Sometimes it's not good for kids to be in a home where the parents are at each other's throats.
Right, sometimes. But sometimes it is. I don't know. Psychologists are changing their mind on that one.
And they chose that family before they came into it.
I say consult. Don't be so quick on the trigger.
I heard that one before too.
Fine. So what did we say so far? Four members.
Red line number one is
don't get violent.
Don't get violent. Red line number two is
don't walk. Don't walk out only if you want to get her mad at you.
Red line number two was we don't mention divorce. Okay. What else? We're working our way up. We started at ground zero. We're working our way up. What else do we expect of ourselves? Should be ahavat olam, the basis of our relationship, what we call the eternal love. So far, we've been working really low down. Now, let's work our way up.
You shouldn't, like, hit stuff in, like, the house thing. It's a good idea.
So, you're just saying don't get violent with objects. Don't go throwing things in the house. I'm with him.
It's a guess.
I think that's a very nice thing to work on.
You could scare them,
right? I definitely think that's a positive thing to work on, and it's legitimate if a person draws that as a red line.
But it's not like in and of itself a red line.
I think it's a little hard to say because what happens if your wife walks in and says, Yehuda, you remember you told me not to drive your new Porsche that's a company car and you're responsible for $80,000if I mess it up. And you remember you told me that I better take a taxi rather than taking that to pick up the kids because the risk of 40 shekel outweighs the risk of $80,000. And remember I promised I would never, ever, ever do it. And remember, you hit your keys, and we said I would never, ever, ever do it. And remember, you said you wonder if I'm going to really stand by that promise. Well, you were right, Yehuda. And you go and you look out the window, and
Baruch Hashem,
Baruch Hashem, right? You don't have to worry what to do about next month's paycheck of $80,000, right? So would you be so surprised if you took your mug of coffee and threw it on the floor and it broke into smithereens? Would that be the worst thing in the world that you did? It's a hard call. I'm not sure it's the worst thing in the world. I'm not saying throw it at her, but I'm saying, you know, I can understand. I'm not sure that that's the point where I'd say the guy crossed the red line just because when he saw that his wife did that, he smashed his coffee mug. You know, it's probably not right. It's probably a lot of things, but I'm not sure I would put that in the list. I'm not sure. But there are other things we should put on the list. Don't use children as a tool in fight between couples. So I want to tell you a story. We had a guy named Aaron in a yeshiva I went to. Aaron used to show up with a wagon and a hat, and he'd go pedaling on the streets with his headphones, you know, like all those homeless guys. And he'd go pedaling on the subway collecting donations. And then he'd come back to the yeshiva, sleeping in his own feces. Oh, come on, totally retarded, okay? Totally retarded. So one day, I'm talking to the principal of the yeshiva, and he says to me, as Aaron's walking by, he was such a sweet kid. I said, what do you mean? Was he normal? So he said, yeah, normal? He was a sweet kid in this school. I remember him. I said, so what happened? He said, well, Aaron's parents decided to get divorced. And then Aaron showed up one day. He must have been in second or third grade with a beautiful new coat. It was a winter day. And he shows up with this beautiful new coat. Okay. The next day, he shows up without a coat. So being the principal, I went over to him and I said, Aaron, aren't you cold? Why'd you come without a coat? So Aaron says, I don't have a coat. So I asked him, what happened to your coat? So Aaron says to me, well, my father gave me the coat yesterday, and this morning, my mother burnt it.
I mean, it's sad, but
not funny.
It's good enough.
Eventually, Aaron went out of his mind. Literally. So the parents used the child as a tool in their fights, and the kid went out of his mind. You know, what can a third grader see? At some point, he snapped. I saw him as a retarded person. I couldn't imagine that this fellow was once a normal, sweet child in this school. So I think Yehuda's red line is a very good point. Even when there's an argument between the spouses, that has to be a red line, that we're not using the children as pawns in our arguments. Even push comes to shove, whatever happens. But I don't know if that's a red line within the marriage. I mean, it should be within the marriage. It's usually more of an issue outside the marriage. But you're right. Some couples make that mistake. They end up setting up alliances within the marriage. This kid's always on dad's side. This kid's always on mom's side. And it's wrong. I'm happy you're laughing. But couples do use kids in their arguments, and that's wrong. The couples always have to be united with the kids. The fact that in the bedroom they're going to have their discussion, that's up to them. So that's another red line which I would recommend couples do. It's not easy, and that is the argument shouldn't be in front of the kids. It's very hard. It's very hard. Especially because you're going to find your wife said something, and when you try saying something back, she goes, shh, the kids are here. Right? And then, right. So then it's like, but if you're really serious about bringing up your kids right, then you realize you're going to swallow things, and fine. If it's really important, you'll save it for the bedroom. Go make a note of it. Or ask her, you know what, let's stop supper and let's go talk in the bedroom.
Doesn't that freak out the kids too?
No. If they don't know what's going on in the bedroom, no. Now, I think that a couple should try to draw a red line which includes a certain tone to their arguments. I would like to think that couples can maintain a certain level within their arguments. I would like to think that a couple will decide to themselves. I don't think it even has to be an agreement between them that they won't curse one another, that they won't be purposely hurtful to one another. I think a person should make that decision with themselves. It doesn't matter what she is. I have to be a human being that doesn't want to do something that's specifically spiteful. And I think that part of the Avat Olam should be that I am decisive in my decision. I married this person. My most basic goal is going to be to make this person happy. Not only to not be hurtful. Or, in other words, one of the rules I used to say in previous series was, she's no worse than your chavrusa or your friend. There are certain things you would never tell your friend or your chavrusa. Then how come you're going to tell her? There are certain ways of talking.
What do you mean?
What do I mean? There are certain ways of talking which you would never say to anyone but your wife. The closer the person is to you, the more you allow yourself. Think about it when you're fighting your brother. You're willing to say things that no one, you wouldn't tell anyone else. Your brother, your sister. I don't know. You got brother or sister?
I have like a 40-day-old sister.
Ah, okay.
Brothers.
Saw that. What?
I have 4 younger brothers and like a 40-day-old sister.
Okay, mazal tov. So you didn't fight with your sister yet, okay?
I understand.
What? I haven't met her yet, right?
Name it last night.
Okay. When you're in a very close relationship, so sometimes that evolves to the point where you're willing to say things or do things that you wouldn't do with anyone else. Well, there should be a base respect that's no less than a stranger. She's no less than anyone else. She should be much more. Part of Avat Olam should be, I'm never going to treat her less than I would a perfect stranger. The fact that we're so close does not permit me, even if I'm upset with her, to treat her less than other people. I should treat her more. And I think that a person should expect of themselves that I will always aspire to do what's best for the relationship, not only for me. Well, that's so really hard.
So you mean that you would, like talking nicely, being close and everything, you'd be as close, if not closer, as you would with your siblings, but when it comes to talking in a state of being upset, you would not go as far as any farther than you would if you were talking to your own kavuta or friend or something?
I think there has to be a certain way of arguing. Look, when Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was burying his wife, so he was eulogizing her. So he said, the custom is that a husband asks forgiveness from his wife or from the departed, the relative, before burying them. And so I have to ask you for forgiveness. But I have to say that we've lived together, I don't know how many decades it was, and I don't think I ever did something that was wrong to you, that wasn't in line with the Shulchan Aruch, with the way I should have behaved towards you. So being that the custom is to ask for forgiveness, and I'm a human being, it could be I once forgot something, I didn't realize I did something, I'm going to ask you for forgiveness. And the whole world was talking, all over the world. This really made headlines, all over the world. I was a child in elementary school when this happened. And every classroom, everyone was talking about this. How could a person say, after so many decades, I don't think I ever did anything that was wrong to you? So this part made the headlines. There's a continuation, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was a phenomenal Talmud Chacham, but also a phenomenal Tzaddik. So there's a continuation to the story, though. The continuation is that a student once caught him in a taxi, and as they were driving, the student said, Rebbe, I don't understand. You mean you never fought with your wife? So Rav Shlomo Zalman looked at him and said, of course I fought with my wife. What do you think? So the student said, I don't understand. You said you don't have to ask for forgiveness. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, right. Of course we had disagreements. Of course there were things we argued about. But it was always within a realm that was correct within halacha. I never said anything that was personal against her. You could disagree with someone. You could disagree vehemently with someone. But there's a line that you cross when it becomes personal. There's a line that one crosses when it becomes a prohibitive thing to say. You're allowed to disagree. You're allowed to be upset. It's okay that you think this way, I think that way, and we don't come to agreement. Okay. And we have to figure out how we're going to get to an agreement.
Can the we fact. Talk about the things you're not allowed to say?
What do you mean?
What does the Shulchan Aruch say you're not allowed to say?
So, if I remember correctly, I don't think we have a copy of the book here. We have a copy of the book upstairs, though, in the library. If I remember correctly, he worded it things that are personal, that cross the line between an objective disagreement and a personal disagreement, something that's said about the person. Meaning, I could say, I don't think it's right that we should send our girls to school with a head covering when they're unwed. And my wife will say, what do you mean? It's an extra level of piety. What's wrong with it? And I'll say, well, I think in accordance with halacha, there's no reason to do it. The Shulchan Aruch says that's not the custom today. And my wife will say, right, but the Shulchan Aruch says that once upon a time they did do it, and today there are people who are doing it, so why shouldn't our daughters be among those that are more pious? And I said, but if I cross the line and I say, you know, you're always looking for new things. No one in the world does this. I crossed the line. I said, you're always looking for. It became personal. If I would have just said, I don't think we have to look for new things. If I would have just worded it, why do we have to be better than our mothers were? Our mothers didn't do it. We didn't do it. You see, I didn't say anything personal. I could say the same disagreement without becoming personal. But the second I say, you're always, you are, I became personal.
Well, that's better than just walking out of the house.
So we got two things in tonight. Okay, we're making headway. We're moving forward. Okay. Okay. So this goes back to the point you said. So it's not that one doesn't disagree with one spouse. It's that one has to think about what mode of disagreement they're going to have. And even if I feel that my spouse wasn't right towards me, that doesn't allow me to be incorrect towards them. On the contrary, like I always say, it takes one to tangle. It takes one to make a marriage work. The fact that she did wrong, okay, so at this moment I'm going to do what's right and I'm going to make the marriage work. You can't say, well, she said this to me, so I'll say that to her. No, that doesn't work. Okay, so what?
It seems like this is like being with a wife is also a good practice on how to deal with the rest of the world.
Yeah, don't you wish it were the other way around?
Yeah.
Right, that's the big thing you learn in marriage, that the rest of the world doesn't teach you for marriage. Marriage teaches you for the rest of the world, right? But the rest of the world doesn't prepare you for marriage, right?
Tell me if I was wrong for saying this, but a guy came up to me and was complaining about his wife, and he said, I just said one thing to her, and, you know, she was just, like, so offended by, you know, by the comment. I'm like, come on, let me just say this one little thing. I'm like, well,
mean, it seems to me that I would find that flattering. He's like, how? How's that flattering? I'm like, it means that she likes you so much that one little thing that you said to her hurt her. She would be hurt if a stranger came up to her and said that. She's hurt because you, someone who is familiar to her, someone who's close to her, is saying that, and it's actually a compliment for you. Is that a right attitude to have?
I have to think about it. We've gone way over time, and we haven't even finished. So we discussed Ahavat Olam. We discussed the idea that there has to be a basic love that we expect of ourselves that we don't cross. We discussed red lines. We started at the most basic level, not being violent, even if she was violent, not using vile language, not using the D word, divorce. We discussed the idea of trying to maintain the arguments in a realm that at first is no less than you treat someone else. Better we should aspire for what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said. It shouldn't reach a personal level. I think you have to develop it beyond this. We're talking about ahava. We're talking about love. We're talking about the basic love. And I don't think that it's my job to tell you. I think that it's your job. And through the classes, I hope you'll find points which you say, okay, that's going to be part of the Ahavat Olam. Of course there's Ahava Rabba, where we're still going to discuss how to develop the relationship, how to make it fun, how to make it beautiful, how to make it grow. But we have to remember the relationship fluctuates. And when it hits bottom, the bottom of the graph has to be Ahavat Olam, that we don't go beneath that. And what's that basic? So some couples will tell you, you never go to sleep with a fight on the surface. You always work it out. Okay. Maybe that works for some people. I don't know how that works. I never was a proponent of it, even though smarter people than me have said it. I don't know how to make it work. I don't know. I believe that when people are super tired... No, I think when people are very tired, they tend to have a hard time working things out. Whereas if they sleep, then they work it out tomorrow. So then they're more capable of doing it. But I can't go against it, because big people say it, and I don't think I know enough to argue with them. But I don't know how to explain it, so I can't be a proponent of that. But there are other ideas that we'll discuss through the course of our learning, and I think every person has to think as we're discussing our classes, what points am I taking for myself that are going to be Ahavat Olam? I don't go less than that. I strive that should always be there. Is it going to be that I'm always going to tell her I love you? Not only never mention divorce, but I'm always going to be able to tell her, you know, I love you. You know, I'm upset. Yeah, I don't think it's fair what you did. I'm really upset at what you did. Yeah, we did agree you wouldn't drive my Porsche, and I am in debt $80,000, and next month's paycheck is gone, all $80,000 of it.
But you elevated
my level to Shemayim. But I still love you. And you have to think, as we go through the different concepts we'll be discussing, we're going to discuss that it's wrong. A person should never make a crack at his wife's expense. There are certain things that should never happen. To shame her publicly, to make a joke at her publicly, to break her confidence and share certain things with other people. There are certain things that it's my responsibility that should never happen. We really discussed the most basic red lines, and I think that there are many other points that we have to think about as we go through them, protecting our wives' honor. We'll see as we go through it. But I want you to think as we work through our classes, which points are points to work on and which points are points that I'm not going beneath that. That's got to be a given. That's always got to be there. You always have to remember, you can expect this of yourself. But when it comes to your spouse, put her online and let her listen to this class. And then hope that she'll also adopt some of these points and more. Again, I don't think we reached the basic ground zero yet. We worked from minus 500 and we're working our way up. What's going to be at your ground zero? What's going to be at your basic level? That you still have to think. We haven't yet covered enough points. We covered many things that I think are universal to every couple, that every person should adopt. I think there are more things that every couple should adopt, and it's up to you through the classes to find what you're going to plug into your concept of Ahavat Olam, that basic eternal love that should be there within the marriage.